Five, four, three, two, one. With one of the last rain reports for the summer of 2014, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. Being a microcosm of society, ham radio operators are a diverse subculture with as many opinions as there are websites. There are many who feel strongly that public service is the cornerstone of the amateur radio service, and you don't have to look or listen far to hear opposing viewpoints about what is most important. There are disturbing observations that need to be shared, like this one.
I can safely say of all the hobbies I've ever been involved with, I've never seen as much infighting as I have as in amateur radio. And unfortunately, some of it's coming from the public service side of the hobby. That is not good.
That's Mike Corey, KI1U, Emergency Preparedness Manager for the ARRL, Amateur Radio's national organization. What he'll be saying over the next 2 weeks may be the most cogent commentary we've ever brought you here on the Rain Report. Everyone involved in MCOM, or emergency communications, should pay close attention over the next 2 weeks. Here's part one of Mike Corey, KI1U's 2014 Dayton Hamvention Talk entitled, The Served Community. While his observations are his own, they reflect those of many folks in amateur radio who are concerned about its long-term future.
I've been at League headquarters now for just over 4 years. Prior to that, spent 10 years in law enforcement and emergency management in various capacities in Indiana and Mississippi. So don't let the one fool you. I am not a native New Englander. In fact, grew up on the Indiana side of the border. The served community concept. Now, anybody that has worked with emergency management for the last 5 years has heard of the whole community concept that FEMA's pushing. Craig Fugate, administrator of FEMA, started this in 2009, and the concept is very simple. Everybody plays a part in the response to disasters and emergencies. The very first responders are the victims themselves, the people that it first affected. I seen a good case of this during the Tuscaloosa tornado. The Alabama section manager was doing repeater work on a tower when the tornado hit. Spent the first 4 hours walking around gathering walking wounded before EMS could arrive. He was the very first responder. The whole community concept engages everybody, not just emergency management, not just public safety. It involves all the organizations in the community, typically what they call COADs, community organizations active in disasters. It involves residents. It helps them get somewhat organized through things like ready.gov and the CERT program. And we can play a role in that too. We've traditionally thought of ARRI's role as we work with or for a served agency. That's it. There's a lot more to it than that. Now the push is on partnerships, very grassroots level organization or involvement. Sometimes it may not be as organized as we think it should be, but it doesn't mean it plays any less a role. Looking at the old model, the served agency alone. We work for the served agency. I've heard a lot of people say this, almost like they're an employee of the served agency. I like the term we assist the assisters. We are a body to ourselves. We are the amateur radio service. We're not just ARRI's, we're not just RACI's, we're not just Mars or Saturn. We are the amateur radio service, and we assist those that are providing the assistance to others. We pass messages. We're going to look at a little bit more on this as to why this is changing. How we communicate. Everybody that has been involved with ARRI's for any length of time knows the good old workhorse, 2-meter analog FM, and that too is changing. The emphasis on non-amateur radio training, that's really a development in the last 10 years or so. How many people in here have ICS 100 completed? How many in here have DXCC? That's a bit of a problem from the amateur radio side. ICS training is non-amateur radio training. DXCC, worked all states, contest certificate, participation certificate, something like that, tells a much more important bit of information. It tells that you get on the air. The number one thing we have to do is get on the air and use our spectrum. That is more important than anything else we do in amateur radio. Getting on the air and using our spectrum, because we will lose it if we don't use it. There can't be any of this sit around, wait for something bad to happen. We have to be on the air regularly and often and put those frequencies to use because they are incredibly valuable and there are people that want them. Turf wars and gang colors. I've often said if you give a ham an acronym, it's the equivalent of giving him his gang colors. You can cause more fights but with an acronym in ham radio than anything else. The problem with these acronyms is it gets us to thinking of us versus them. RACI's versus ARRI's. Mars versus RACI's. This versus that. And that shouldn't be. We are, as I said earlier, we're the amateur radio service. All of us. Regardless of what sub-branch we want to follow. We've built walls. We've separated a good portion of the amateur radio community. Contesters and DXers, they've got the same problem. They've built these walls. I'm a contester. I'm a DXer. I'm an MCOM guy. They weren't built by served agencies. They weren't built by the public. They were built by us, and we have to take them apart. We've gotten into the habit of overpromising, and the league is just as guilty of this as anybody else. We go into a survey agency. We're the cost-effective solution. We're not. Recently, I found an old document. The league even put that in it itself. We're not the cost-effective solution. Never have been, never will be. We are a solution to a certain problem, but not the cost-effective model. I've also heard reports from the field where public safety agencies are using 2 meters for their dispatching, because it's cheaper to buy a 2-meter mobile than it is a public safety radio. The failure focus, when all else fails. I've got a lot of problems with this phrase. We can't go into a situation egotistical and like we're there to save the day because others are building faulty systems. This is a bit of a problem. It's a failure focus. It doesn't put the focus on the amateur radio service is an asset to the American public. We are a group that comes in and fixes your mistakes because you didn't think ahead. Craig Fugate, in some of his remarks about amateur radio, and I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Craig Fugate. He's a ham. He's a league member. But a comment that he made, he talked about how great amateur radio is, what an asset it is, but something to the effect of most of the time, they're waiting to be called up. They're waiting to be activated. And that's not true. We shouldn't ever be idle. Anybody that has spent any time in amateur radio knows there is too much stuff to do in amateur radio to be idle. As I said earlier, number one thing is get on the air, make some contacts. Idleness should not be a problem, but if we start to think that all we do is sit around and wait for something bad to happen, idleness will set in. And that's often where these gang wars and conflicts come from. Technical expertise. Unfortunately, in every decade, there's been the gateway into amateur radio. For many in the 50s and 60s, scouting was a gateway in. The 70s, there was the CB boom, and that became a gateway in. The no-code technician license in the early 90s. Following 9/11 and Katrina, emergency preparedness has been a gateway in. The problem is we've kind of gotten a good pool of operators, but we don't have a good pool of technical experts, particularly in the public safety area. I've heard of Aries teams out in the field that need to put up a dipole. Well, all they've got is wire, the insulator, and the coax, but nothing is ready to go. They didn't know how to cut the dipole to length. That should not be a problem. We need the technical expertise. Not everything is about push to talk. A lot of it is the guys that can make sure all the station building components are there to make sure your signal is getting out effectively. Changes we need to accept. Communication expectations have changed. I don't want to open up the can of worms of a debate on anything, but if you look at, say, the NTS program, founded in the mid to late 40s, at a time where the normal means of communication were landline telephone and mailing a letter. Neither one of those are considered the main or normal means of communication anymore. The internet, cell phones, text messaging, social media, those are the new norm. We have not adapted to the new norm. We're starting to, but we got a long way to go. And when you go into a disaster, they're not looking to mail a letter or make a landline call. They're looking to get their cell service back, internet back, and so on. Neighborhood focus, the whole community I mentioned earlier. This is the new trend. This is the new way of emergency management and disaster response. It's not just emergency management. I was in Indianapolis at the National VOAD meeting. VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disasters. This is the association of volunteer associations that go out when disaster strikes. The league is a member of the National VOAD, and we encourage at the section level or at the state level amateurs to participate in their state VOADs and the local VOADs or COADs. These organizations, Red Cross, Salvation Army, LDS Disaster Services, and one thing to think about is we're kind of an anomaly in the VOAD system. Two-thirds of VOADs are faith-based organizations. Only two have a amateur radio component right now, Salvation Army and Southern Baptist Men's Conference.
You're listening to the thoughts and concerns of Mike Corey, KI1U, ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager. We'll continue this excerpt from his 2014 Dayton Hamvention talk in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available 24/7 at therainreport.com and via Twitter, @TheRainReport.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
we've got an opportunity with these folks because they're looking at the whole community concept. We need to be looking at the whole community concept. And we have 55 organizations of OAD. Only two have amateur radio counting us. We have 52 potential partners that amateur radio can assist through there. And they want to be on board with the whole community concept as well. The return to normalization in a disaster. There was a document that came out and kind of made its way around recently talking about disaster communications and what the expectations are. Now, keep in mind, communications is now ranked up there with like food and water as an essential in a disaster. And as we all know, that first 48 to 72 hours, that's our moment to shine in a disaster. But the expectation has shifted away from, we'll help you send a message, to, we'll enable you to communicate as you normally would. That's the expectation now. It's part of the reason things like charging stations are becoming a priority in disaster response. Nobody's interested in sending the radiogram as they used to be. It's now, I need to charge my phone, I need to charge my laptop or tablet. Folks want to be able to communicate as they normally would. Disaster response and recovery is about getting back to normal as fast as possible. The hardening of infrastructure. Anybody that has spent any time with the public safety communications realm knows there is an incredible push on hardening the infrastructure. Without a doubt, it is far more robust than it has ever been. It doesn't mean we play any less a role, but we have to understand our role as amateurs as this infrastructure is hardened and made more resilient. And this is probably one of the biggest changes just in the last 5 years, let alone 10 or 15 years. Information overload. How many people right now have a smartphone, laptop, or tablet on them? Guess what? You're all reporters. You're all journalists. And you will record and document just about everything you see and hear. You're not a trained journalist. And all that information goes somewhere. It's probably going to go on Facebook, Twitter. It's going to be emailed to friends and family. During a disaster, this information goes into hyperdrive. It is a flood of information coming in, primarily now through social media. And this is something that as amateurs and communicators, more importantly as communicators, that we need to be looking at how can we assist with this information overload. So the served community, what is the served community? We've talked about served agencies. We know what a served agency is. It's a partner, not a customer. It's the partner. The served community is the customer. That's the average citizen, your neighbor, your friends, your family, those that are not doing this on a day-to-day basis, those that may not have an emergency preparedness plan or a family plan for an emergency. These are the customers. The customer isn't happy, guess who goes out of business? Because they're the ones voting for people that will go into office that can take Spectrum away from us. We have to keep the customer happy. And we do that by working with the partners. So the focus is on individuals, our neighbors. It is a next-door focus. And within your own home as well. Again, as I said, it's enabling others to regain normalcy as quickly as possible. Now, I'm going to back up just a bit because I want you to kind of keep something in mind as we go through this. There are over 700,000 licensed amateur radio operators in the United States. Now, if you figure in club licenses, silent keys, inactive, let's say there's maybe about 350,000 licensed active amateur radio operators in the United States. Now, what we typically figure is about 5 to 10% are going to be active in public service activities. And that could be anything from just helping out at the local parade to manning a station at the National Weather Service forecast office. Only 5 to 10%. That leaves anywhere from 90 to 95% of the active amateur community not plugged into this. And in all fairness, they may not have a great deal of interest in this stuff. But when disaster strikes, that interest is going to peak. Administrator Fugate made an interesting observation when we met with him last year. Getting into the numbers accuracy issue, but he said amateur radio is 700,000 data collection points. And this is something we have to really look at in our community. Now, I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana, not too far from here. When I was there, there were probably about 300 to 400 active amateurs in the area in various levels of activity. And a lot of that at the time, GM's electronics division was there, so we kind of had a bit of a surplus than probably we do now there. Only a handful were really active in Aries, and at the time there was a Racy's component. But what I noticed is the DXers, the contesters, the rag chewers, the guys that were in the VE sessions and all that, if there was an emergency, they thought of one thing. I can communicate, and I can get messages going out, I can get messages coming in, but I'm not going to leave my home. And that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Your first responsibility is to your home and family. But they were never plugged into the system in any way. Because we've all said this at some point. Oh, they come out of the woodwork. You haven't had the training. We don't need you. That is completely and totally wrong. You do need those folks because they are ground truth reports. Anybody that's done Skywarn stuff knows what a ground truth report is. They are eyes and ears in the field that can tell you what's happening in real time. They may not want to be part of your Aries group, and you have to accept that. But you also have to figure out a way to get them plugged in. This is kind of the model to get them plugged in. Information conduit. These folks are seeing what's happening real time in their neighborhood. They can get that information to your EOC if they know who to talk to. And all you got to do is tell them. You don't have to send them through an ICS course to tell them, here's the net, here's the frequency, and here's the call sign that we'll probably be using. It's very basic information that they need. Those that are interested in emergency preparedness, and I think most amateurs are, because we have an interest in staying on the air, so we want to make sure we have power. We want to make sure our antennas stay up. They can help their neighbors become better prepared. It's not beating them over the head with a FEMA book saying, you got to do this, that, and the other thing. It's just leading by example. Diplomacy, and this is something that unfortunately is incredibly lacking in amateur radio. Sometimes we are the world's worst diplomats, and we really have to be, particularly if you're interested in any form of public service, because that is the public face to amateur radio. Contesters, DXers, and I am an active contester, I'm an active DXer, but I'll be the first to admit, in the grand scheme of things, I've got 328 countries confirmed and all the cards to match. That means nothing to anybody but me. And contest scores? You win the Boston Marathon, you're on CNN. You win CQ Worldwide, and the only people that know about it are the three guys that you beat in getting first place. So, this is our public face. And we have to be on our best behavior. That is not just how we act, that's how we speak, that's how we look. If we look like the crazy coming down the street yelling and screaming about emergency preparedness and Aries this and that and wearing the reflective yellow vest and the bandolier of HTs, we're not going to get very far with our neighbors. Diplomacy is absolutely essential. And if you look at 97.1, and we all like to quote that when we talk about public service, it also says in there, the amateur is a representative of international goodwill. There is a diplomacy component to amateur radio. Getting the most of the amateur radio network. That's what this is about. Amateur radio is a network. And we haven't been very good on leveraging the entire network. We look at it as separating it. Oh, you're public service, and if you're not public service, you're something else, and we don't want to talk to you because you don't have ICS 100. That should never be part of the conversation. We need to leverage the entire network. Because if you think about this, contesters, and I know the love between Aries and contesters, you can just feel it sometimes. Contesters are a huge resource for public service. During Hurricane Isaac, slow-moving storm coming through Louisiana, dumping a lot of rain. It wasn't really a windy event, but just a very heavy rain event. Net control operations on HF were getting rather long and drawn out, and they were running out of operators. So one of the things we can do from headquarters is if you need replacement net controls, if we know what you're looking for, we can help you find them. We can kind of put the call out for them. So we got the requirements and what you'd expect, some familiarity with how to run a net, a station that can hear those checking in, and the ability to commit to a 4 or 5 hour shift as a net control operator. We put the call out, and of all the people that called in and said, I can do this, it turned out only two were needed because just the changing conditions. The two that were best suited were contesters. One of them was Kirk Pickering, K4RO. He's the editor of National Contest Journal. They had the stations. I'll never forget getting a phone call from a guy in Texas, and I said, what kind of station? Now, bear in mind, every Aries guy that called in said, I've got a dipole at 20 feet and 100 watts. This guy says, well, what band are you on? I said, well, it's on 40 meters. He goes, oh, okay. He goes, I got a two-element beam at 110 feet and 1,500 watts. Will that work? You're hired. So these contesters are an asset. They get it. We call it traffic. They call it an exchange. They don't copy and exchange correctly, they lose points. They intimately know station building. That's something that, unfortunately, we're not doing too well in Aries, is the idea of building a resilient, effective, efficient station. They know how to keep their butt in the chair for a really long time. Good example, my boss is Dave Patton, NN1N. And anybody that's been active has probably got a few QSOs in the log with him over the years. He took the first place position in CQ Worldwide for single op high power. 48 hours on the air for pretty much all of it, 5,800 QSOs. That's an operator. And his error rate is something like 1%.
The observations of Mike Corey, KI1U, Emergency Preparedness Manager for the ARRL, Amateur Radio's national organization. We'll bring you another excerpt from Mike's thought-provoking talk next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2014 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73, from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.